This is the 1896 to 1916 Part 7 lecture. It's not really at UFIS. I forgot where I tried and missed the button and recorded the wrong, did not record the material at all until I got to the second page or last, next to the last page of the Taft administration, numbers 75. So the 1908 election between Taft and Bryan, number 75, was the only thing that got recorded on the regular UFIS recording. So this will be a replacement recording. Part 7 of the 1896 to 1916, Part 7, picking up with item 59 about building a Central American canal. This lecture will probably not be real superfluous in regards to a lot of added filler material, but instead just the main definition of the items you need to know, which will still get you through the AP test. In 1850, Britain and the United States negotiated a joint treaty called the Clayton-Bulwer Treaty. It said that if there was any canal building to take place, they would do it jointly. By 1901, the Hay-Ponce-Foote Treaty had abrogated or ended the obligations between Britain and the United States, making it possible for the United States to pursue canal building on their own unilaterally. Prior to 1901, there had already been efforts to try to build a canal through Panama when Ferdinand de Lesseps of number 60, famous for having constructed the Suez Canal in 1869, was hired by Colombia to try to build a canal through Panama. He failed because of jungle disease as well as the jungle terrain and was thrown into debtor's prison. So the building of a canal through Panama seemed to be quite a task that was beyond the scope of what was considered possible at that time. By 1901, however, the year we were working with, the number 59, the United States is now very much interested in building a Isthmus Canal somewhere in Central America, either Nicaragua or Panama. Part of this is just stimulated because of, during the Spanish-American War in 1898, a ship called the Oregon had to sail all the way around South America to get to Cuba to help in the war effort, and by the time it arrived, the war was over. And although it didn't make a difference in the war, it did indicate two things: the need for a Central American canal to get military ships from one coast to the other quickly, as well as the already desired commercial access that a canal would provide. It also showed the need for a two-ocean navy. So by 1901, the United States has a sincere interest in canal building, and the Hay-Ponce-Foote Treaty drops that obligation with England, making it possible for the U.S. to pursue it on its own. In the year 1901 to 1902, two different companies competed for U.S. monies to try to build a canal to Central America. The Maritime Canal Company, American-owned, offered to build one for $60 million through Nicaragua, and the old French company that was once owned by Le Lacipe was now in the hands of Philippe Bonavaria, who for $100 million would build it through Panama. Because it was an American company and a cheaper offer, the Nicaraguan choice, the Maritime Canal Company, was chosen. Bonavaria and his French company, rather than giving up, hired a lobbyist named William Cromwell. Cromwell donated $60,000 to the Republican Party, and Bonavaria dropped his price down to $60 million in order to get the bid from Congress. He was lucky when a volcano named Mount Motombo exploded in Nicaragua. Its photo was placed on postage stamps, and Cromwell and Bonavaria made sure that each senator received a piece of paper on their desk with the picture of, with the postage stamp showing the picture of Mount Motombo exploding, saying, "Official document regarding volcanic activity in Nicaragua." Through the bribe as well as through the eruption of the volcano, the Senate made a switch on which particular direction they would go on supporting canal building, moving away from the Nicaraguan choice and instead selecting Panama through what's called the Spooner Amendment of 1902 in Item 63. Next, what came was the negotiating of a treaty with Colombia, called the Hay-Herón Treaty, in which John Hay, Secretary of State, negotiated with Foreign Minister Herón a treaty that would allow the U.S. to build a canal through Panama. And the reason that Colombia is involved in this is because Colombia owns Panama, and therefore the farthest southern Central American nation was Nicaragua at this time, since Panama was a province of Colombia. The treaty involved the following provisions: a 6-mile wide strip rented for 99 years at $250,000 a year, with a $10 million down payment. When the Colombian Senate investigated these terms, they came to the conclusion, rightfully so, that the United States would come in time to believe they owned the canal rather than was renting the canal, so Colombia decided to try to get as much money as possible by charging $25 million in the down payment. So the deal fell through. Roosevelt was furious. In fact, he's known for having made these two quotes: "Those contemptible little creatures don't realize they're jeopardizing their own future, and they're like highway robbers in the night." Bonavarria, the head of the French company, not wanting to lose out like Lesseps did, engineers a revolution in Panama, in which, when Colombia tried to suppress the revolution, their ship was fired upon by the American gunboat, the Nashville. So once again, American gunboats are involved in assisting in a revolution, like the Boston did in Hawaii in 1893. Now the Nashville does in 1903 in the Panamanian Revolution. The revolution is a success, and the new president of Panama, interestingly enough, Philippe Bonavarria of the French company, negotiates a treaty with John Hay. So the new treaty in 1903, which will replace the Hay-Huron Treaty, is called the Hay-Bonavarria Treaty. Its provisions are quite similar to the one before, except it's a 10-mile wide strip instead of 6-mile wide strip. $250,000 a year, yearly rental. No 99-year restriction. It was open-ended. And it was $10 million down payment. So Colombia gets nothing, and the new Panamanian government makes the treaty with the United States. Of course, Colombia is obviously angered by this. And some Democrats in the Senate argued that maybe before the canal construction should begin, there should be a debate in the Senate, to which Roosevelt responded, "Let the debate go on, and while the debate continues, so will the canal building." The canal was completed through the engineering efforts of George Washington Gethels, and jungle diseases such as malaria and yellow fever were conquered by the doctor William Gorgas, much as the way Walter Reed had attacked jungle diseases and conquered them in Cuba. And that's something that's of significant note here, is that American medical research helped conquer jungle diseases in Cuba, Panama, and the Philippines at this time. Not surprisingly, in number 69, the canal policies, or the techniques of achieving the Panama Canal, triggered Latin American resentment that was added on top of what was previously discussed in regards to Roosevelt Corollary and the Guantanamo Bay Platt Amendment. So we're building a story here from 1898 up to now 1914 of interventionism and influence the U.S. exerts over Latin America, creating a negative image, which will be compounded in the Taft years through what's called dollar diplomacy, which is on the tape that did get started tonight. So when you listen to the Taft years tape, you'll hear that. Now turning to a different theater, the open door policy in China. We already discussed the open... Oh, one more thing before we go to the open-door policy in China. More about Panama. After the rise of Castro to power, agitation against U.S. interference and influence in Latin America became very, very strong from the far left-wing directions of the Castro Revolution, causing a number of people in Panama to become quite agitated about American control and profits of the canal. And so... from the 60s on through the 70s, there's continued complaints and criticism from Panama about the control of the canal, causing in 1979 a renegotiation of the treaty under the Carter administration, in which we negotiated by 1999 to turn back over control and profits of the canal, retaining the right to use it as well as defend it militarily. Because Americans had become just as the Colombians had feared, believing that the area was no longer rented but owned, it became an easy political target for Ronald Reagan, running for president in 1980, to blame Jimmy Carter that he had given away our Panama Canal in that treaty. Okay, now item 70 on the sheet. because I just went through from 63 through 69 on the Panamanian Revolution Canal. 70 on the sheet starts to discuss the open door policy threats that Japan posed in the 1890s and 1900s. The first is the 1894-95 Sino-Japanese War, in which Japan started a war with China, essentially over the control of Korea, was victorious and negotiated at the Treaty of Shimonoseki that Japan would exercise protectorate colonial influence over Korea, as well as Taiwan or Formosa off the coast of China, which would exist until 1945 at the close of World War II. A decade later, in 1904 through 1905, a conflict breaks out between Russia and Japan, the Russo-Japanese War, over control of the Manchurian region of China, the northeast corner, which was hotly contested because of its high mineral resources for industrial production. In the conflict, the Russian Western Fleet sailed all the way around the Baltic and English Channel around Africa. And when they arrived in Asia, they were in Port Arthur, China, they were sunk by the Japanese fleet, which was shocking to the world. Japan was winning the conflict when, at that time, Theodore Roosevelt offered to mediate a settlement to the conflict to maintain the balance of power in the Far East and the open-door policy. In the settlements that occurred on our next page, number 73, at Portsmouth, New Hampshire, Japan was recognized in its control over Korea as well as Taiwan, but was refused a monetary indemnity they felt the Russians owed them for being on the winning side at the time that Roosevelt pressured the mediation. So even though the Japanese agreed, and it seemed as though Roosevelt had mediated a successful end of the conclusion, he kept and maintained the balance of power in the Far East, it actually resulted in a deep resentment by the Japanese, who felt that it was a case of one white nation, the U.S., supporting another, the Russians, over an Asian nation. And Japan did feel overly sensitive, I don't know if you can say overly, felt sensitive to racial prejudice from the European, Euro-American national attitudes towards the Far East. Bismarck had previously said, the Otto von Bismarck, Chancellor of Germany, to beware of the Yellow Peril back in the 1880s, discussing the rise of Japanese power in the Far East and its threats to the markets of China. And so Roosevelt had been responding to this and thought he had done well to maintain respect and balance, but the Japanese still felt sensitive to it being a racial issue and trying to keep them weaker than white powers. Because of Roosevelt's negotiations at Portsmouth, New Hampshire in 1905, as well as his participation in the Algeciras Conference over a conflict in Morocco between European powers in 1906, he received in 1906 the Nobel Peace Prize, the first U.S. president to do so. A year after the Treaty of Portsmouth of 1905, in item 73, a crisis occurs in the San Francisco school system, somewhat related to this, when Japanese school children are denied the opportunity to go to schools in that system, which from a legal perspective was totally legal, not only because they were non-citizens, but even if they had been citizens, the 1896 Plessy versus Ferguson case allowed for racial separation in public facilities like schools. But in this particular case, the discrimination caused great resentment among Japanese nationals and the home country of Japan, creating a verified friction of exactly what they were feeling at Portsmouth, and that is racial discrimination by the United States. Roosevelt wanted to try to soothe these feelings, and so he went to the school system and asked if the kids be admitted. The school system challenged him and argued. Eventually, he asked for what they wanted. They wanted a reduction in immigration to San Francisco. He went to the Japanese, and they agreed, not on paper, but in verbally, to a gentleman's agreement of reducing their immigration to the West Coast. Of course, at the same time, this obviously still creates a racial insult because of the restriction of immigration being called for. Wanting to try to still emphasize that the balance of power should be maintained, and really nothing else, just mention that whether they like it or not, the United States did take the upper hand in the settlement of affairs in this time period. In 1907-1908, the Great White Fleet, the American Navy, was sent on a world tour with purposeful conspicuous stops in Yokohama Harbor and Kobe Harbor to show that we had the military that could visit and attack them more so than they had that could do the same to us. So all in all, what we've covered today, for the most part, on this special presentation, was Roosevelt's foreign policy towards the achieving of the Panama Canal, and his approach to dealing with the rise of Japanese power and threatening the open door policy to China. And if you're not familiar with the open door policy, go back to the Boxer Uprising and the first time that John Hay sends around open door notes. That's of significance. In 1908, Roosevelt chooses not to run again for re-election. He'd promised not to after winning the 04 election, and by the way, although probably unlikely to be on a major AP test, in 1904, Roosevelt did run for re-election against Alton Parker of New York. Roosevelt will become the first vice president to become president upon the death of a previous president to run for and win re-election. The party didn't really want him to. They didn't like his crusading progressive notions, but he was so popular the party couldn't deny him. But in 1908, he didn't run. He would later regret that. He'd made the promise in 1904 not to run after that time, which, of course, he'll later break in 1912, which we'll come to. So he chose and anointed Taft, the Secretary of War, who was also the first peacetime Governor General of the Philippines. Taft had dropped many hints saying he'd like to be a Supreme Court Justice, not a U.S. President. Roosevelt ignored them all, and the pressures of Roosevelt and Taft's wife made him take the candidacy. And he ran against William Jennings Bryan, who had run three times. This was his third time to run, losing in 1896, 1900, and 1908, this time to Taft. So that starts the Taft administration. And on the UFIS tapes, there is the Westark tapes, the Pinchot-Ballinger controversy, the Payne-Aldridge tariff, and the speaker fight. All three of those are not listed on the sheet. But on the tape, you'll hear me saying those items and spelling the names so that you can keep up with them. Again, they're Pinchot, P-I-N-C-H-O-T, dash Ballinger, controversy, which is about 1910, and the Payne-Aldridge tariff of 1909, and the 1910 speaker fight. The purpose of all three of these is to illustrate that the Taft administration came off looking not nearly as progressive reform-minded as Roosevelt because of these incidents. Although in many ways it's probably unfair to Taft when you consider that he ran through the antitrust suits nearly 90 cases in 4 years compared to the 44 cases of Roosevelt's 8 years. Also, the Taft administration involves the issuance of dollar diplomacy, which is in item 76, but that's on the audio tape. It was kind of rushed in a hurry. We did not, like this is, get a chance to talk much about Nicaragua or Dominican Republic, but you'll hear what you need to know on the tape. So that takes care of the 1896 through 1916 Part 7 supplement that was left off tonight because the machine didn't get started right. One other thing before I close. I hope that you've been listening to all these various presentations, or at least if you haven't had a chance to listen to the web or the things on CD, that you did at least use the review sheets as reading guides and followed in the textbook. Good luck with all that. One more thing. I know you wanted to stop, but just because of the Pinchot-Ballinger controversy, Payne-Aldridge tariff, and Speaker of the House fight is not on this sheet doesn't mean it's not important. It has been on AP tests before. It will be on my quizzes and tests coming up.